Hey guys, me and Dustin are back every week to discuss life, love, and of course, all things video related. So if you haven't subscribed, make sure you do so.
I don't know. I don't think I know how to do an intro. I can't. Hi, everybody. I'm Dustin.
There it was.
There it is.
You planned
really,
that.
I'm really hosting the hell out of this.
That was a good intro. I like the irony. I think you're going for an ironic kind of opening there.
Sure. How's your week, buddy?
I mean,
what have you been up to?
Well, it's tax week for me, and I haven't started, and my appointment with my CPA is on Tuesday. So I think Sunday and Monday are going to be pure hell.
How much do you pay for a CPA?
$500.
Once a year?
Yes.
Or are you paying them like every month or what?
Once a year.
Like, how do you record keep for the 12 months?
Oh, I do. It's my record keeping is fairly straightforward. It takes me like 2 days to kind of compile all the work that I didn't do throughout the year. But my invoicing software and the software that I use for my contracts and all that stuff, it does a pretty good job of just keeping track of everything. I just have to go through and find all my expenses, because those aren't attached to like a credit card in that system or anything. So I just have to like go through all the places that I normally buy shit from, like Amazon, PayPal, eBay, like, and just kind of go through line by line and make sure that I have recorded that that expense, so that it gets written off appropriately. And that usually takes me like a day or two. So it's really not that bad, but I just hate it so much that, it's like, no matter what I do, I always end up owing, which is really the smart way to go about things. You really don't want to give the government an interest-free loan, but,
it's not that smart, because if you end up getting stuck at the end of the year with an amount of money that you can't raise, it's a fucking disaster. And if you do it 2 years in a row, it's even worse.
Yeah, you don't want to get stuck with like a $20,000 tax bill or something like that. But if it's like $3,000 or something, then I'm like, okay, like whatever. I will say the first time I ever ran my business and then filed, they were like, owe $29,000. Like, it was insane. And I was like,
yeah.
I was like,
you're like, oh no, I've made a grievous error.
That was so awful. I'll never forget that feeling. That was horrible.
I had a big tax bill from 2013, which was my best year ever. And I just didn't appropriately save for it. And I ended up going on a payment plan with the IRS. And what was wild is at the time, they were like, well, what can you afford? And they set my payment amount. They let me pick the amount. So I was just like, I don't know, like $100 a month.
Yeah, you pick the amount and they pick the interest rate.
Well, yeah. So the way it worked is like, just paying the amount that I had to pay according to the agreement, I would have paid it off in like 300 years. So like it was literally never going to get paid. So I basically just paid $100 a month for like a bunch of years until I sold my house. And then I had money from selling a house and I just paid it off then. But I just made that payment for like a couple of years in a row.
Yeah, you probably.
Like, I was just because I owed like, I don't know, 12 grand or something. And I paid $100 a month for like 2 years and still owed like $11,900.
Yeah.
Like I made like no dent.
Right. Because it is the IRS is a lot like a credit card company in the sense like they operate the same way. Basically, they're like, oh, you have this debt. We'll let you pay it off really slowly.
Yeah.
How could you turn your debt
into a subscription that never ends?
Right, right. I've definitely heard stories of people owing 20 grand and then 9 years later, they still owe 20 grand or worse. They owe like 23 grand.
Right, exactly.
It's like after missing a payment. Yeah, it went up after a decade of making payments and you realize like, oh, this is a money making scheme.
Yeah, so I started putting aside 30% and then still came up short 1 year. I was like, oh, I have to put aside 40%. What is even the point of working?
That doesn't sound right. It should be more like 15. It was 15, outrageous. It is outrageous, dude. The problem,
there's a lot of factors.
The only thing I am getting,
I'd rather save 40% and then at the end of the year be like, oh, I can buy a camera and three lenses because I oversaved.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
Instead of being like, oh, the government's going to butt fuck me now.
Yeah.
Because I undersaved.
Well, they're going to do it anyway because you're going to buy that camera and three lenses and you're going to pay fucking sales tax.
Yeah. Well, that's a different government. That's your local government coming for you.
Oh, how convenient.
Yeah.
Let's just set up like 9 more different types of government while we're at it.
Yeah. We don't have enough oversight.
Oh, so you never told me about what happened because I don't know if you even want to talk about this.
Yesterday? About what I called you about in the morning?
Yeah.
All right. Well, so here's the question. Did we talk about the original incident? Did that come up on the podcast last week? I don't remember.
I can't remember, but I feel like it might have. I don't know. Let's just hop to it.
Can we pause this and you go listen to the entire episode from last week? Because I don't want to tell the story twice. All right, I'll just sell it.
Just summarize
and then
it.
And you edit this out.
Summarize it. So, I've heard Joe Rogan tell the same story 9 times.
So there's a guy who, yeah, no, I know. That's one of the reasons I stopped listening to him. It like after like a year or two, you're like, okay, I've heard this. Same thing with Howard Stern. Every story he tells about his childhood, he just repeats it like every 3 months.
God,
every story he has. So you've heard it over and over and over again for fucking 20 years.
That's a road I need to go. I need to go down that. I got to go down the Howard Stern road because I've never listened to him. So I bet there's like a whole really, back catalog that I could probably enjoy. Or is it not really like
if
that?
If you really get into it, you can get like super obsessed. And it could be like a year or two before you kind of are just like, oh, I'm just like a regular fan now. But there, like when I got into it, like a year into it, I just became like, this is the greatest thing I've ever found in my whole life. Like it gets really addicting. And then you start going and listen to old shit. I mean, he's been doing it for like 50 years. So like you go listen to old stuff. It's a completely different show than it is now, but it's also still really good. And there's a lot of backstory and stuff, but all those old stories will seem new to you for like a couple years.
Yeah. And I bet some of it's like a time capsule. Cause he has interviews with people who aren't like alive anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to me, the best era was when Artie Lang was on the show with him. And that's like been, I don't know, 15 years ago or something. Like it's been a long time since Artie was around. And those are the best years. So like you want to go on YouTube and listen to like 2008 shows and stuff. Like when he first got to satellite radio, that to me was kind of the golden era.
I don't, what was Artie Lang famous for? All I know is that he had a major addiction problem. That's all I know about him.
Yeah, he still does. In fact, I don't know if you've seen him lately. He fucked up his whole nose. He was using a glass salt shaker to crunch up some cocaine in a hotel room.
Well, that's the right way to do it.
And what he didn't realize is that the glass had like broken or something. And so he got crunched up glass in the cocaine and then he snorted it. And so he snorted all these little glass shards and he got like, it cut him up and he got like an infection and whatever. And when you look at him now, like he has like a majorly, majorly deformed nose. He's been out of the public eye for a couple years now. He did a little stint in jail for like a year for narcotics possession. The Howard Stern will never talk to him ever again because he got real fucked up on heroin and kind of didn't come to work for a while. And after that, Howard was like, all right, I'll just never talk to you ever again. But Artie was original, like the first thing, his first big break, he was on like the first or second season, first two seasons maybe of Mad TV. And then he had a movie, and he's been a stand-up comic the whole time. So, you know, he's had a stand-up career. But, I mean, really what made him big, honestly, I think the biggest thing he did was when he was actually on The Stern Show. And the way that went down was Norm MacDonald was a guest. And Norm and Artie had become friends from, I don't know, working on a movie together or something like that. And they became best friends because they were both fucking degenerate gamblers. And so they were drinking and gambling and making each other laugh and blah, blah, blah. And so Norm brought Artie onto the Stern Show, and the two of them just like were fucking really funny. And Howard ended up inviting Artie back a couple times. And there was we're really getting into the history here. I don't know if anyone cares about this, but there's a guy that was on the Stern Show in the early days named Jackie Martling, Jackie the Joke Man. And he was on it for the first, I don't know, two decades or something. But eventually he wasn't happy with his pay, so he held out for more money. And in the end of that, he basically, they just let him go and they never hired him back. And so they always called it the Jackie chair. Like basically like there's an empty spot on this show where it used to be Jackie's. And so they just brought in a bunch of different comedians. They would have like a different comedian come in every week and kind of sit in the Jackie chair. And so Artie sat in the Jackie chair and killed it and was just so good that he ended up getting the chair kind of full time. And I don't know, he was there for like a decade or I don't know, maybe it was less than that. Maybe it was 4 years. I don't know. But I think that's when he got really famous because he's one of the fucking funniest people you'll ever hear on radio. And then when that all went to shit because of his drug problem, you know, he rebounded and had a podcast or two or three, and they all go really well for like a year, and then he gets fucked up and everything falls apart. It's gone dark. and this last time after he went to prison, I think he does some stand up. But like as part of his parole, he can't leave like his one city. So like he's stuck where he is and he seems to have completely left the internet. Like he doesn't do any kind of social media. Like nobody knows anything about him. And, people ask the guy that used to be his partner on his most recent podcast, but apparently he like stole a bunch of money from that guy. So like they're not super close anymore. It's dark stuff, but he is one of the fucking funniest people of all time. I mean, when he tells a story, it's God, there's just nothing. I miss him. I miss him a lot. I mean, I listen to his podcast every episode and just he also did that thing we were talking about earlier where he got to the point where he was repeating himself. I mean, you know, he was strung out on heroin, so I don't think he really was conscious of it, but he would like start working out a bit and then he would do the same fucking bit on every single like 10 podcasts in a row. And you're like, all right, come on, dude, you did this for like 30 minutes last time and you're still doing it. And it got a little repetitive. Anyway, I don't know why we're fucking talking about this. You should cut me off at some point.
No, I was interested. I mean,
okay.
I know that you're a Howard Stern fan and I just,
we're called super fans. We're called super fans.
Okay.
Yeah. Like if you meet another one in public or whatever, boy, you don't even have to mention Howard. You just go, hey, you're a super fan? Yeah, I'm a super fan. Anyway.
Yeah.
Baba booey to you. I don't know if you'd like it or not. I love it. A lot of people that are fans of the old show hate the new show. Because he's gotten there's been a dramatic shift in his interviews. Like basically he got to a point where he just wanted to be able to interview more famous people and do more serious interviews. So a lot of the stuff, like a lot of the hijinks that made him famous early on, it was basically like, hey, every single guest that comes in here,
has to,
it's
ride
okay if
this,
they never come
this,
back.
They have to ride.
They have to ride the Sivian. I didn't know you would know that.
Then he realized
you would know about that.
He wasn't going to get Taylor Swift to ride it. So
Yeah, exactly.
So he was like, maybe we lose the Sibian, but we get Taylor Swift in here to talk about her.
Yeah,
new
he
album.
Wanted to have, you know, Jennifer Aniston come in. So now he does. And a lot of people say he's like the greatest interviewer of all time. And he is good. But
he wanted her to come in, not come on.
Exactly. Now that it's like 10 years into it, I'm kind of over the interviews, especially like he's trying to live his childhood dreams or whatever. So he's constantly interviewing these like 75-year-old rock stars. Mm. And like, I just don't like, it's not my generation. I just don't care. You know, like he had, you know, like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. He had each of those guys on separately. It was the exact same fucking interview with the exact same fucking stories. And honestly, if you showed me those four guys, I could not tell you which is which. I have no idea which one is Nash. I have no idea which one is Stills. I have no idea. Like, I just don't give a shit. And so he's had, you know, the guys from The Who and somebody, you know, the Rolling Stones and like all those, you know, 75-year-old, 80-year-old dudes. And like, I just don't give a shit. And he's clearly not a real musician. So like, not that I'm like a brilliant musician or whatever, but okay. I minored in music in college. I was in band all the way from junior high through high school. I played piano as a kid. And like, again, I'm a terrible musician, but I know enough about music that when I hear his interviews, it's just like, oh my God, it's so embarrassing. And the way he just like doesn't know anything about it to the point where he just asks the wrong questions. That just like indicate that he just doesn't know any. And then like he's obsessed with like, so how do you write a song? Do you write the music first? Do you write the lyrics first? And it's like, dude, you've asked that to every single musician that's ever come on your show to the point where I'm tired fucking hearing that question.
Yeah.
Cause it's not that interesting or whatever. To just constantly, or like, how do you memorize all the lyrics? Like, that's not really an issue, man. You know, you wrote the song. You're going to practice it. You're going to, it's not that. And he asks that to actors too. How do you learn all the lines?
Yeah, it's called a rehearsal.
Because it's your fucking job. You rehearse.
Yeah. People, yeah,
is it the hardest thing about acting, memorizing your lines? Like, no, not really.
Yeah, you have this vision of like, these people that just come out and they just walk on stage and play some song. And, but like you don't realize it's like, oh yeah, you played like this same song like 20 hours this week. Or well, like you rehearsed 20 hours this week, this whole set. It's not like you just walked on stage and gave a great performance. You fucking sat there. You did the vocal warm-ups. You fucking like went through the set list 9 times. You rearranged how you were going to play it. You played it with the band. Like, it's this whole thing.
And then you had to play the same song every single night.
Yep.
For fucking 9 months a year.
Yep.
For 30 years in a row.
Yep.
Like, oh, how do I know it? Because I've played it 55. And there's another thing. I mean, you were never in a band, but I'll just tell you. There's a thing that
I was into the rescue. You ever heard To the Rescue?
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Video Bros Podcast. If you want to ask a question, leave a comment, you can do so by messaging us at Video Bros Podcast, all one word, on Instagram.
No, what is that?
That was my band.
Oh, you were in a band? What'd you play? Drums?
Yeah.
Oh, so I guess you have told me that because somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew that you played drums. All right. So there's a thing that people like to say that is one live show is equal to 10 rehearsals. Like, because there's a live audience there, there's so much more pressure on you and your brain is, you know, like it, the stakes are so much higher that you're concentrating so much harder and you don't have that, like, hey, we could just stop and start over if we fuck up, like that whole, the show must go on thing. It intensifies that experience so that one show is as valuable as 10 practices. And so if you're actually on tour and you're playing every single night, 7 nights a week, that's like you're having 70 rehearsals a week. Plus you actually did have a rehearsal before each show because of sound check. It's like,
and a plus yeah, a real fucking, actual rehearsal.
You get
where
pretty
you,
goddamn good at playing those songs.
Yeah, I mean they really go fucking through it over and over and over. Like it's not. Yeah, it's actually not that glamorous, I guess, when you think about it. It's got to be so fucking obnoxious.
I don't know if I could do that job.
Imagine like, writing a song you think about, where you're like, you start playing it so much that you're like, fuck, I wish I had never written this goddamn song.
Dude, do you think Billy Joel wants to play, sing us a song, you're the piano man? He's been playing it for 50 fucking years.
I've heard of some artists being like, yeah, I don't so do that much. One anymore. Like, I just can't bring myself to do it anymore.
Yeah, I need a bonus $1 million for that song. I just hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That. Could you imagine being a Metallica and having to go play Enter Sandman again? Or not even that, like a song from, you know, Creeping Death, like a song that you wrote when you're 18 years old and now you're, you know, you're in your mid 60s. You've been playing the fucking song. But like, God. But at the same time, like if you're Metallica, you can't not play Master of Puppets or you'll have a fucking riot. Like you have to, there's certain songs they just have to play. They have to play one at every single concert. They have to play Master of Puppets at every concert. They have to play, you know,
who's the puppet now?
It's a trap, dude. And comedians talk about the flip side, how like, oh, they can't tell the same joke twice. So like you write material, you go tour it for a year, you put it on film and put out your special, and now you have to start all over. And you have to do that every year, every other year for your entire fucking life. Every year they go through the crisis of, oh God, how am I possibly going to come up with new material?
Yeah, it's two
sides
of a coin.
It's better to just get on a podcast and say the same shit over and over again.
Two sides of a coin, I guess. I mean, would you rather be the one who comes up with a thing once and has to play it forever? Or would you rather be the one who always has to come up with new stuff, but you never have to do the same thing forever?
Personally, I'd rather be the one that always has to come up with new stuff. And also, there's Jerry Seinfeld has a different approach that I think might be the happy medium that is not what I hear a lot of comedians talk about, which is he rotates stuff in and out. So at any given time, his set is like, you know, 50% new and 50% old. And he'll just be like, okay, I'm going to put in 5 new minutes. I'll take out 5 old minutes. So he's always got some stuff that he knows is going to work. And he's also always trying out some new stuff. So it's like an evolve. He never has like an act exactly. Like, you know, he doesn't have like, oh, here's my new hour, you know, but he also has been very reluctant to put out specials. You know, he'll put out like a special every decade, where the new model for stand-up comedians is to put out a special every year, which is also part of why specials aren't that good anymore. A lot of fucking specials are just 10 minutes in, you're like, all right, I haven't laughed once. I got to turn the shit off because they're not sitting long enough. And then there's other comedians that, they'll come up with an hour and then they'll never put out a special and they'll tour on that same hour for like decades. And, that's not good either. Cause you know, they'll be telling political jokes from like 3 presidents ago. And you know who's never put out a special ever and is supposedly one of the greatest comedians that have ever lived? Jay Leno's never had a special.
I saw Jay Leno live.
Did you really?
Yeah, he came to our little downtown Pikes Peak Center here in Colorado Springs.
How was it?
It was good. I laughed. I was like, I don't know, because I had seen Aziz at the same venue and I was like, that was good. And then I was like, and then Kate was like, hey, I got us tickets to see Jay Leno. And I was like, okay. I didn't know what to expect, but he's like, he's funny. He's really funny.
He's
an older
dude. It's kind of dad jokes a little funny. Bob Hope, but it's funny.
It's like timeless funny, you know, where it's like, oh, he can get up there and not swear a bunch and be funny. and still be like an old dude who you respect and you think is funny. He's great at it.
You know, I was just thinking late last night, I worked 12 hours yesterday. I got home and started watching YouTube and smoking a little weed. And, I realized that I'm ready to forgive Jay Leno. Like when the whole Conan O'Brien stuff went down, I took Conan's side and just was like, all right, I guess I'm done with Jay Leno. But the truth is, like, I always liked Jay Leno before. And part of me understood Jay's side of the whole Jay Conan thing. Like, if you look at it only from his point of view, I'm kind of like, yeah, he got screwed too. Like, I kind of get it. It was just so nasty that I just kind of was like done with Jay Leno for a while. But you know what got me back is I've been watching his car show. Like, I guess he's been doing Jay's Garage for like a lot of years now.
Yeah, it's been going for a while.
Well, they're now throwing them all on YouTube, or maybe they have been throwing them on YouTube for a while and the algorithm just found me. But I've been watching Jay's Garage on YouTube, and it's like, it's a pretty fun little show. And like, I'm not really a car guy, but it's got me feeling like a car guy. All of a sudden I'm like, oh, maybe I should get a project car going and build my own, you know, sports car for the next 10 years, which is like something I was super into in high school. And then I bought a 1980 Formula Firebird, which I told everyone was a 1979 Trans Am, because nobody knows the difference. The 79 Trans Am is significantly more valuable because that's the Smokey and the Bandit car. But if you get a 1980 Formula Firebird, it looks like the same fucking car. The fact that it's Formula instead of Trans Am just means it's like a slightly smaller engine. And the fact there's 1980 instead of 1979, like maybe the headlights look a little bit different, but other than that, it's the same fucking car. So that was like a dream of mine. And, I wanted to buy this car real bad. I looked and looked and looked for one. My budget was $2,000. So it had to be like a project car that I had to fix up. I found one in Dallas. I was living in Houston at the time. I'm 17, I think, in high school. And my mom's like, absolutely, you are not going to Dallas to buy a car that's covered in rust and doesn't even run. So I was working at IHOP, and this guy that was my manager, I think his name was Jimmy or James. Oh, his name was James. And he was also a car guy. And I was talking to him about it, and he was like, I'll go get the car with you. So I skipped school one day. I rented a U-Haul trailer, and James took me in his truck up to Dallas, and I bought this Trans Am, and I brought it home, and I put it in, I put it at my girlfriend's next door neighbor's house. So my girlfriend's neighbors are this elderly couple, and half the year they lived in some other state. So I kept it in their driveway. I worked on it every day after school. For months and months and months, every weekend and every day after school, I just be like, hey, I'm going to my girlfriend's house. And I would just be over there, you know, turning wrenches on that thing and replacing parts and getting it up and running. And, I finally got it driving, and then, I had enough money to get the body work kind of done and get it primed, but I didn't have any money to get it painted. And the deal with my mom was she was going to give me $2,000 if I could raise $2,000 so I could buy a $4,000 car. And she wanted me to get like a Honda Civic or something like super smart and super dependable and reliable. But, you know, I wanted this car or whatever. So anyway, I worked on it as far as I could until I just totally ran out of money. And it was time to get it painted. And I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to tell my mom that I'm thinking about buying this car that I already own so I can get that $2,000 from her. I went to our family mechanic and I told the guy, hey, I bought this car. My mom's going to come ask you. I'm not going to tell her I already bought it. I'm going to tell her I'm thinking about buying it. My mom's going to come ask you about it. And you've got to just tell her it's a good car and that you checked it out and there's nothing wrong with it. And you can't say anything else because I already bought it. I really need you to. And he was like, I am not comfortable with this. I am not lying to your mom. I've known your father since high school. Like, I'm not comfortable with this. And I just go, you'll do the right thing. And I walked out. My mom went over there and the guy was like, oh, I think you better let him get this car. He seems pretty into it. And, you know, it's pretty serviceable if he wants to work on it, but whatever. So then I brought the car home for the first time, like 7 months after I bought it, and was like, look what I bought today. And that was when I was 17. And so anyway, after that, now it was driving, it was painted red. It fucking broke down every fucking week. Every fucking week, some part broke on it that I had to replace. There was one part that broke like five times before I finally realized what was causing it to break over and over and had to replace that. Also, it had T-tops, and I replaced all the weather stripping on the T-tops. But even with the new weather stripping, it didn't work because the body wasn't straight anymore. So every time it rained, it was like I was in a water park. So I would just get fucking completely soaking wet. There was no passenger seat. So like if my girlfriend was in the car with me, she sat in the back seat and then she could just have her legs all the way forward up next to me.
Yeah. And, your wife now? That was your wife?
No. I didn't meet my wife until like a decade after.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
No,
I we met my wife that up. Oh,
after call. No, oh, this Jesus. Was my high school sweetheart.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Woo, it's sorry not a secret.
Sorry about that. I'm sorry. I know, Rachel.
You're sorry. What?
Sorry, Rachel. I know you're listening. I'm sorry.
Yeah. She's never once listened to this and she never will. You know, like,
I love how many of our families or wives or anybody who knows us has
gives
any
a fuck.
Fucking interest in listening to this.
Well, to be fair, the vast majority
wouldn't you
of people
be kinda
that curi- I know.
What, but if your wife was doing a podcast, would you be like,
let me go.
Let me fucking
see
what the fuck she's saying.
She probably assumes we're just talking about videography stuff. She doesn't know that I'm like constantly divulging personal details about our marriage and sex life.
Okay. Well, that was a good car story. Is it over or does it keep going for a long time?
Well, so I fixed the car like every week for like a year or two. I had the car for like two, and eventually I got over it. And so I decided to sell the car and just buy something more dependable and just a basic ass regular car. And I listed it on eBay and then it sold. And then the day the auction on eBay closed, I got T-boned in an intersection and totaled the car. So I had to cancel the eBay thing. And then I sold it to somebody locally, but I ended up selling the car smashed in half to a guy that owned a body shop and was going to fix it up or whatever. I sold it for almost the same price I paid for it. Like, I bought the car for $1,900 and then, okay, I spent probably $3,000 fixing it up, but I sold the car for $1,700 after it was totaled. Not bad.
Could have been worse.
Oh, also because that car just wanted to go fast. If you touched the gas, it would only get faster. There was no ability in this car to maintain speed unless you were like taking your foot off and on the gas, like, and you know, kind of like making yourself sick or whatever. If you just held your foot on the gas at all, it would get faster and faster and faster and faster. And so I got 7 speeding tickets in 1 year in that fucking thing. So then my next car was a baby blue, powder blue Ford Contour that went 0 to 60 in about 3 months. I mean, the fucking slowest car. Like, it was like to the point where it was dangerous coming on an on-ramp to get on the highway.
You're just like you're like a fucking turtle trying to get on the highway.
Yeah, it was great for me at the time because I had a lead foot. I was a very impulsive young man, and this car put a stop to my speeding tickets because it was impossible to speed in it because it took you, I mean, flooring it for 5 minutes to get over the speed limit. It was, you know, but it kind of like I got it out of my system with that Trans Am, with that Firebird. I mean, I like that whole wanting to be a car guy thing. But
You got
now that
have,
I'm watching Jay Leno again, I want to build a fucking Shelby Cobra.
You either have to have a lot of skill or a lot of money to be a car guy.
A lot of money and a lot of time. That's the other thing, is how am I ever going to build a project car and try to make a movie? You know what I mean? It's kind of one or the other.
Well, I think the key
to go
is
out and
you need
work
to have
on that thing every weekend and for an hour every day and 4 hours every Saturday and 8 hours every Sunday, like for 3 years in a row. You definitely can make a movie in that time.
Well,
you
have to
that
have
screenplay
a,
instead.
You have to have a weight bench in your driveway. So you like,
I do.
You work on the car and then you go
pump some iron. Yeah. And turn some iron and pump some iron.
Yeah. I think that's the only way that works.
Well, the other thing, I mean, that would make it a significantly better experience is actually having the money to throw at it all the time without it ruining your life. Like if you have a grown man's income and you can manage it, that would make it a whole lot better. And if it's not your daily driver, like this, I was trying to make this my daily driver and get to work and stuff. And it was breaking down on me all the time. It's a completely different story if you got the Subaru ready to rock and roll and then you have your project car, and if it works today, cool. And if it doesn't work today, it's not going to fucking, you're not going to lose your job over it.
Yeah. The thing I realize about, cause I like old cars. Like I like old Range Rovers. I like old Ferraris. Like that's kind of my thing.
Yeah. Who doesn't? But
it's like, you can't make it your everyday car. Because there's a fucking reason you see these people loading these cars onto trailers. You know what I mean? Like they're not driving them around. They're shuttling them around to be seen or to then drive them. But I can't tell you how many times I've been in Aspen and I've seen the 86 Ferrari GTO that I love so much on the side of the road. And there's like,
oh, broken down.
Yeah. And there's like nine like Lambos next to it. And they're all just standing around trying to figure out what to do next. Whose trailer are we going to load this onto? That's the real question, because that's a whole different world of like, this is not a reliable vehicle. This is a fun project.
Yeah, it's a toy.
It's a never-ending fucking project. And part of the exhilaration of owning a car like that is I'm driving through Aspen right now. I don't know if I'm going to make it to Snowmass.
What I really think that is more likely to happen is to buy a surprisingly affordable, older Porsche Boxster. Like a 2003 Porsche Boxster that you can get for under $10,000. That is something that I think actually would be practical and fun. For one thing, people took care of them because they're Porsches. So generally speaking, they're for their age, lower mileage and well-maintained. But just everybody that has a Porsche just talks about how much fun they are to drive. And
why,
I think
why
I could
not
get,
a 911?
What? Why not?
Yeah.
Because I'm poor.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't, because it's not fun. I don't care enough to spend $50,000 or $100,000, but I think it's fun enough to spend $10,000 on because it's a third car. It's a weekend driver. It's mostly going to sit there. And then every once in a while, we're going to go on a date or something.
See,
you know, me and the wife will be like, let's go to dinner in the Porsche.
That's why I like the little rat rod roadsters or whatever. The like the little two seaters that have no seatbelts and they kind of look ridiculous. But like, that's a good date night car.
It's just a toy. Fun thing to do.
We live close enough to downtown that we take the roadster out. It has. Well, listen, if we get hit in an intersection, we're done. But if we make it, if we get T-boned, we're dead. But if we make it to dinner, we eat a T-bone. That's how you sell it to the wife.
Exactly.
Do you want to eat a T-bone or not, bitch?
I feel at this point, if I had the money to spend and I had to choose between getting a fun weekend driver sports car or getting a grip truck, I think I'd get a van and start filling it up with grip and camera equipment.
But you definitely wouldn't wrap it, knowing you.
No, because I wouldn't want to get robbed.
You're so like freaked out about this robbery thing. Hey, did That's I tell you?
You've obviously never been robbed. I've been robbed. I've had a car and window smashed out.
We had
$30,000 worth of video equipment stolen out of our
triggered by the thought of somebody smashing. I just don't see the point
in inviting extra. Like, it's just not. It's a bad time I don't want to have. What I'd really like is a Ford Transit, the longest one they make, the tallest one they make, so I can stand up inside it. And I would like it to be like a dark gray, like a charcoal or whatever color, you know, with like some metallic flake, you know, sparkly paint or whatever. I've seen those like that color on like a Sprinter van, and it's nice looking. So it's like a notch above just having it be white. But I'm not going to put shit all over the car that's like, hey, there's $70,000 worth of cameras in here. And only thing stopping you from having it is your ability to throw a rock at a window.
Yeah, I could see that.
You obviously didn't grow up in South Houston. That's
fine. The thing is, if you have a van like that and you're investing in that, invest in a garage like storage unit where you park the van. So like when you drive to work in the morning, you're driving to a garage to get the van out of the garage. You're not parking it on the street.
I have a two-car garage upstairs and a third garage downstairs.
So what are you worried about?
And I would park in. Well, you could still get robbed when you're doing a job. The time where our windows were smashed out and we had $20,000-$30,000 worth of stuff stolen, we were inside a place filming. So we had $20,000-$30,000 worth of gear and that in the car left over after us going inside with two cameras and lenses and audio. Like, and we were only at the shoot for one. So what it was is we were shooting a reality show in Dallas, Texas, the first time they hosted the Super Bowl. So like when Jerry World was really new.
What was the
show?
This would have
been probably 2011, maybe.
What was the name of the show?
Foam Finger Nation. And the idea was
Finger Nation.
Foam Finger. Yeah, you know like how they have those big hands, the number one hand?
Yeah.
It's like number one fan. And yeah, people wear them and wave them at basketball games.
Yeah.
So it was Foam Finger Nation. I think there's still a website.
You think I haven't come across that by now?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, we have a podcast audience that's not. You're seeing the visual of me holding my hand up in that shape.
That's right.
They're not.
We got to make it clear for all the 8-year-olds that listen to the show.
We have a lot of idiots listening to this show.
Because
what kind of smart person would waste their time with this? So, fuck it. So the idea was, it was about to be like, here's how to have a fan experience. And the pilot was here's how to enjoy the Super Bowl, and not just going to the Super Bowl, but like showcasing all of the parties and events that happen the whole week around the Super Bowl. So it was sort of a travel show. Like I think the inspiration was the Art Man show. I don't know if you ever saw Art Man, but he would just like go to conventions and walk around with the microphone. And it was on one of the first HD channels, like Access TV or something. That's like not a real TV channel. Anyway. So yeah, we went to the Playboy party hosted by Pamela Anderson. We parked in a garage.
Wait, so you're telling me, so you got to meet her?
Say what?
Did you meet her?
Actually, yes.
That's cool.
Well, not meet her. I mean, it was on the, I didn't talk. We were on.
You got to see her.
I got to stand a few feet away from her and point a camera at her.
How old was she?
And our guy tried to interview her, but I don't think he got a word in.
Was this Bay?
I mean,
this wasn't Baywatch years. This was post Baywatch.
No, when Baywatch was on, I was kindergarten.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying that. I'm just saying for the 8-year-olds listening,
the same
who
age
don't
as you.
Know.
This was 2011. So if you want to go Google Pam Anderson's age, you can do the math for yourself. She didn't look great.
I had a pretty big crush on her. I think she still looks pretty good given the situation.
I think she looks pretty beaten down by life, but she was a good looking
woman.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, you've been beaten down your whole life through all sorts of, well, I don't know. You've been propped up.
Dolly Parton says it costs a lot of money to look this cheap. Anyway, so we were only in this party for 1 hour. And in that 1 hour, somebody smashed our windows out and stole a bunch of shit. And the bummer is a lot of the shit that was stolen was stuff that we couldn't afford in the first place. So it was rental gear. And the rental house was charging full price for like very expensive cases that we never would have bought that were really old. So like, you know, a case that they were saying was $1,700 for the case for walkies, for like walkie talkies that we rented or something. And it was like, well, no, like we would never would have bought, but I guess our insurance didn't cover it. And I don't know. I personally only had about $1,000 or maybe $2,000 worth of stuff stolen. And my insurance kind of covered it minus like a $500 deductible. But the other guys had, you know, $20,000+ stolen. One guy, one of the bosses had a bunch of his collection of like baseball cards or something that he'd had since he was a little kid was stolen. And also he had a handgun that was stolen. And out of all that stuff, the only thing that was ever recovered was they found one of the walkie-talkies in a pawn shop like a year later. So that's it.
Hmm.
And it has changed. I mean, that shit, it's been fucking 14 years or something since then, but it changed me forever. Like if I'm on a job and all my equipment's in the car and I'm going to go eat somewhere, I'll always try to park where I can keep an eye on the car out the window while I'm eating. I always like would come home and I wish I could just leave this stuff in the car and then unload the car in the morning. Cause I'm so tired. But even if it was a day where I drove out 4 hours to the job, filmed for 10 hours and then packed for an hour and then drove 4 hours back, I still would unload the car because I'm like, I just can't leave this in my driveway all night. It changed me forever. And so, yeah, that's why if I had a grip truck, I would not label it at all. Have you ever seen people get a van wrapped or a truck wrapped or something with the wrapping is printed to make it look like the vehicle is covered in rust and holes and shit? Have you seen this?
It's no, like to I make actually it, have it. It's, no.
It's to make it look like a piece of shit. People get like fake rust and you know, paint peeling off and all this stuff on it. So you can make a brand new $90,000 Sprinter van look like, you know, an old beat up construction worker's truck with, you know, nothing valuable in
it. So that's that something you would do.
I would do that.
I wouldn't
because I think showing up at a job with that, I'd be a little embarrassed. People are like, fuck, man, did we really hire the fucking ghettoest grip truck in the whole fucking country? You know, but no, I would ideally like it to just be gray and just clean and just nothing on it.
Did I tell you that the sticker that I ordered that took 2 weeks and was a total waste of time ended up being garbage?
You were so pissed.
I've decided that I'm going to go with a half wrap on the truck, and I've already started that process. I've got some hail damage being repaired in like a month and a half from now. So right after that,
typical Colorado life.
Yeah, after I pick it up from there, I'm going to take it to the place. I'll already have the design and all that already hammered out, so it'll be ready to go.
Well, send me a picture when you get it done. Let me know if it works for you.
It's going to be dope.
It's going to be dope.
Video bros.
Dope.
It's going to say video bros. Right, we got those video hoes.
All right. So you were asking me to follow up about this confrontation I wanted to have at work.
Oh, yeah. Let's end with that because that's what we started with and we never really got to it.
Yeah. All right. So I think we talked about it on the last podcast, but I'll just recap it. There's a guy who is, he's sort of my boss. I mean, I guess like he outranks me in my department.
He's gay, right? Is he the gay one?
No, he's not the gay one.
He's not gay.
Although one guy thinks he's gay. I don't think he's gay. And anyways, that's not part of the story. That doesn't matter at all. People are just people.
And yeah, love is love. For sure. Definitely. Okay.
Love wins. Anyway, his personal sexual preference, having nothing to do with the story. He's sort of a boss, but just barely, you know, he just outranks me a little bit. You know, really, the guy that hired both of us is our boss. And then the DP is our boss's boss. And, you know, then they have to answer to production and you know what I mean? So, I'll put it this way. He doesn't have the authority to fire me because, if he did, he would have by now. He was very nice to me, very supportive when we started. And in fact, at one point told me, you're going to be my right-hand man. Really, really like you. And, I'm going to train you. And from now on, anytime I get a job as a key grip, you're going to be my best boy.
Dude, anytime honestly, I get a job as a best boy,
you're
going to
be my third. Yeah, you're my best. He literally said, you're my favorite guy at work. And I thought it was kind of corny, but also really sweet. You know, you're my favorite boy. It was just like kind of mentoring me. Was really mentoring me and supporting me in a way that none of the other guys are.
Some people call it grooming.
Right. He was really grooming me. the other guys, like pretty much most of them, they kind of on day one just saw how green I was and, you know, how much I needed to learn or whatever and just immediately dismissed me and just like, you know, like they're not interested in helping me learn. And although one guy is, but actually two guys are. I guess I'm just really in my feelings about the fact that like three or four guys, I don't know, there's seven of us and one guy just like has no time for me fucking at all. And then there's one position where they keep changing guys out. Guy keep being like, oh, I got a better job, and then leaving. And then somebody else comes in, and everybody that's come into that position, there's been four guys in that position. None of them really seem to have any time for me. But anyway, we're outside shooting some exteriors in the parking lot. And I see a bumper sticker on a car that's like, fuck Joe Biden. You know, let's go Brandon, FJB is what it says.
Let's go Brandon.
And I just like, I saw it and responded real quick. Like before I even had time to think about like, hey, you're at work. Don't get into politics. Let that be somebody else's problem. But instead, I was just like, whose fucking car is this? And it turns out it was that
this
guy
is,
who's like,
this is the epitome of you. This is why you, this is what every
this
time.
This is why you're always nervous when you hire me.
Whenever I'm in public with you, I'm just like, any moment, it's going to happen. I don't even know what it's going to be, but it's going to be something. And then it happens and I'm like, there it is. That's the thing I was dreading.
Yeah. One time you got, I could tell you were really embarrassed because we were talking to a wedding planner or something. And I just said something about how I'm tired of how all these modern hipster videographers, are not color correcting their footage and just publishing log footage. Like, I'm tired of this low contrast bullshit look that all of these hipster videographers are doing. And I could tell you were really embarrassed.
I don't remember that at all.
I do. I think about it every day.
Oh, that's crazy. We should try later. We'll try to figure out which wedding that was. Like I have no idea though. I don't remember that at all.
It was like just the way I was coming off was like, I was just a little aggressive. Mm. It was a little too aggressive.
I could probably think of a handful of other times, but that one doesn't ring a bell.
Well, name one.
When we were in California doing a project together
last year,
I was trying to be as vague as possible, but like when we were in California doing a project together, there was a moment where you were pretty upset about something that had happened, but it was still during like the reception portion of the event. And I could just, I would like look over, I would look over at you in a crowd of like 250 people. And I could just see you pacing back and forth, talking to yourself. It was just you like pretty center stage, I would say, in compared to everybody else at the event. And you're walking around talking to yourself and pacing and like having a full blown conversation with yourself while 250 people are like kind of standing around both of us. And I was like, I wonder how many other people notice him having a conversation with himself.
You know what I think? I think nobody. I think nobody's actually looking at us.
And it's not that I don't get it, because I also, when I'm by myself, I talk out loud. I think out loud.
What was it that I was angry? Was it when they...
it was when we started the reception.
They let people come in for the first dance and they didn't tell us it was happening.
You realized the recording wasn't getting any... You weren't getting a feed on the recording that we needed. And then
the DJ couldn't figure out how to give us a feed.
Yeah, and then everything started before we could figure it out. And so you were like very upset about that.
Yeah, because I don't like to not do the job.
Honestly, I'm glad that you were upset about it, because it's like, oh, good, he cares. So that part I was like, okay, I'm glad he's upset about it, because at least it means he cares.
But I care, but I'm also like, this is why I keep fucking quitting weddings.
Yeah, the part where you can't internalize it, though. That's the part where I'm like, oh, he's got to work. You have to work on the internalization. You have to work on being able to suffer inside yourself and not.
It helps me to see you do it, because you're really, really good at it.
Yeah, I'm having the same fucking thoughts that you are. I'm having the same fucking thoughts that you are, and I'm not doing it on the outside. And so that's the only thing that I like. If I was like, hey, Dustin, guess what? I'm going to die tomorrow. But before I die, let me give you this piece of advice. It would only be to like learn to internalize the shit that's happening so that you're not projecting this like crazy homeless kind of vibe. Because you're doing the same thing that a homeless person does on the street,
like a Vietnam guy,
where they're like, they're sitting there on the street corner and they're like, fuck you, you faggot, fuck you, and they're screaming at you, and all you did was pull up to a red light and they're like looking right at you and they're like, fuck you, I'm gonna murder your ass, and you're like, oh my god. You're like Jesus. That's like you, except, you know, videographer.
Except everyone around me is wearing a tuxedo.
Everybody around you is the fucking Patriots quarterback.
Hey, now that you really should not have said that. And also, he's not their quarterback anymore. They fired
him. I'm sure they've gone through many a quarterback over the years.
So at work I go, whose fucking car is this? And it turned out to be like the guy that's like mentoring me, that's like kind of my boss, and he's like, it's mine, I'm a Trump supporter. And I go, why would you? I go, then write it in your fucking diary and keep it in the voting booth. Why are you putting it in your car? Why are you trying to get in a fight with every car on the highway?
How come you didn't say, oh, I did record a podcast with a guy who's a Trump supporter?
That would have been a
better approach. That would have been a better approach.
No, the better approach would have been to never say anything. I should have kept my fucking mouth shut and just never said anything to anybody. But I told you this already.
You know what? I don't even think you're necessarily right about that, because I am all about people's ability to just like say what you want, have a conversation. But the key is to be like very respectful, because I think the one thing that you kind of screwed up there was
fuck is in every sentence.
It was just this aggressive kind of lead up to it where it's like,
yeah,
it almost shows like, hey, I don't want to have a conversation about this, I just want to fucking voice my opinion. And I think that's just a turnoff to people.
Well, no, you know what it is like, and I told you this already before, but that bumper sticker exists to shock people.
Yeah.
The whole point of it is to own the libs. Right.
Right.
And that's exactly what it did. Like, it saw me and it's shocking to me. I was shook and it shook me to my core, and the other thing is, like, the reason I said that is because I assumed I was in good company, like, because, like, I always forget that a person in real life could be a Trump supporter. Like, it's so shocking to me that anybody would ever, like, I would never meet somebody and assume they're, unless they're wearing that hat, or, you know, they're like a 60-year-old white man at a truck stop. Other than that, like, I would never, like, you meet somebody and they're nice and they're supportive and you're getting along and they seem like a great guy. It would never cross my mind that they could be capable of supporting Trump. So it's shocking every single time when somebody tells me, because, like, I'll never understand why, how a person can become a Trump supporter. I can't wrap my head around, like, he's such an obvious, like, con man. He's just the shittiest piece of shit of all time, that I never will assume that somebody might support that. So when I find out that somebody supports Trump, I'm 100 times out of 100, I'm shocked. I'm like, what? It's like, I don't know. Would you ever meet somebody and be like, I bet that guy's a pedophile? It's that same thing. Like, oh, I bet this guy's a Nazi. I bet this guy is, like, one of the most evil people ever. I would never meet somebody like, I bet that guy's a Trump voter. Because I like to think better of people. But I don't know. So it surprised me and it caught me off guard, and I just stuck my foot in my mouth. But since then, the guy had a dramatic shift in the way he talks to me and treats me, in the sense that he basically pretends I don't exist anymore. He won't turn his face toward me when we walk past each other. He doesn't say hi to me in the morning. And then he doesn't want me to help him at work. He doesn't want me to do my job. You know, anytime somebody tells me to do something, then I go to do it. If he's in the area, he's like, you can go away. We don't need you. We got this. And it got really awkward at one point, 'cause he's up on a ladder. And so our boss goes, hey, go over there and support that ladder. Like, when one person's on a ladder, another person is supposed to be on the other side of the ladder holding it for safety or whatever. Like, there's practices and standards here that benefit everybody. Like, we're supposed to do things the safe way. So you're not supposed to go up on a ladder by yourself. And so, you know, our boss says, go over there and support that ladder. And I go over there. He's like, I'm fine. I got this. Go away. And he shooes me away. Then our boss's boss goes, hey, go over there and support that ladder. Then I go, and then it happens again. And it's like, you would rather fucking fall off of a ladder in front of, and it's, you know, it's one thing if we're pre-rigging and there's only grips around. It's another thing when the actors are there, the directors and the ADs are, like, there's 30 people on set. Every single department is there, and you still don't want to be practicing ladder safety. It's like, you would rather fall off of a ladder in front of all these people and fucking shut down production than just work with somebody that didn't vote for Trump for 5 minutes. It's fucking crazy to me, but it's made work really, really awkward, because I already wasn't really fitting in with a lot of the guys, just because I'm like a beginner, I think, that they kind of dismissed me. And I don't know, I guess I'm just remarkably unlikable. So I'm like now eating lunch alone in my car. And when I wake up in the morning, I'm dreading going to work, because I know that nobody likes me and nobody wants me there. And it feels exactly like high school, when I had no friends and everyone hated me. Yeah, so pretty rough week at the office. The job's over in 4 days. So, you know, I'll move on, having burned like 9 bridges.
Well, and yesterday you were like very convinced that you were going to have a conversation with this person.
Yeah. So
did you, what happened with that?
I waited, I let it go on for like a week, week and a half of me going, I'm not going to address, because first of all, I want to make sure that I'm right. I hate to go like, hey man, why do you hate me now? Why are you treating me different? And just him just be like, I didn't sleep last night and it's nothing to do with you. Like, I wanted to make sure it was about me, but it definitely is. There's just too many signs. Like, he's just, he talks to me differently than everyone else. And like, one thing is, like, if we're having a lot of downtime and we're all sitting around on our phones or something, if he sees like a really funny meme, he'll show it to the other guys and he won't ever show it to me. Like, that's a real sign of like, yeah, I'm definitely fucking not one of the cool kids. Like, I'm on, like, he just acts like I'm not fucking there. And then you see him with one of the other guys and they're all buddy buddy and all this stuff. And also, when he still liked me, he talked a bunch of shit about somebody else. So I know what it looks like when he doesn't like somebody and he's treating me the same way he's treating that guy. There was a guy that, after the first week, he called me and said, hey, we're firing this guy and you're getting a promotion. And then that never happened. But I see the way he treats him and that's the way he treats me now. So I'm in with that guy. But yeah, work fucking sucks now. Work fucking, it sucks. It's, I don't like not being liked, but for a lot of my life, I've been not liked. And I've been out of work for so long and I've been, you know, like I haven't worked in a large office with a lot of people. Like I don't put myself in a lot of social situations. And so I kind of forgot how much I'm an outcast, and being back on the job is like, oh yeah, all my peers hate me and they have since kindergarten. Now I remember I'm not cool. So yeah, I had a really depressing week just remembering like, oh yeah, I don't fit in society. That's why I started my own business. That's why I have to take a job where I'm the boss and all my clients are people that I only interact with just very briefly. And I'm not a likable person, which is probably why no one listens to this podcast.
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah. Cause you like me, but I mean, you know, dude, you're like one of like three friends that I have.
We got like 20 listeners, bro. There's at least 20 people that could put up with you.
Yeah, but they're probably hate listening.
And look, we have so much in common. We picked the same color shirt to wear today.
Yeah.
Look, we didn't plan it.
Technically, this is a shirt I wore to work yesterday and then fell asleep on the couch in last night.
Dude, I've been wearing the same clothes for like 3 days now.
Yeah, but you didn't work 12 hours on set yesterday. It's way nastier for me. I need to shower.
That is...
Cause I had the day off today. I didn't force my, cause I hate, I have to sneeze. Fuck.
Gross. Yikes. God.
I think it's going to happen again. Oh fuck. There's a lot of pollen around this week.
Yeah. I've had the same issue.
I hate showering when I come home, just because I'm, you know, it's already been a long day and I'm exhausted and it feels like a chore, but then I hate getting into bed dirty, even worse. And I hate having a shower in the morning because I'm like, you know, I'm already tired and, you know, I don't know, but I've been forcing myself to every night take a shower so that I can sleep better. And so that I don't have so much on my plate when I first wake up. But last night I knew that I didn't have work today, so I allowed myself to just fall asleep on the couch and then go to bed dirty. And I'm wearing the same shirt.
Well, I think we've reached the end of the podcast when we start talking about our laundry situation.
You should probably consider editing out the entire shirt conversation. That wasn't entertaining to anyone. That should not be in the podcast.
Well,
I can't imagine anyone caring about my shower.
Maybe
schedule.
Next time we'll talk about some video related stuff. Who knows? Probably not. Until next time, everybody.
Oh, hold on. I have a video related thing that I want to say. So they brought in a second unit this week. And
G-Unit.
So they a different director and a different DP. And I wasn't on the second unit officially, but they were shooting at the same location for part of the day. And we were so slow that our boss was like, hey, go over there and see if they need any help. And I ended up staying with them for a couple hours. And I fit in over there so much better because that DP works exactly the same way I was working.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like the DP on the show now, like everything he's doing is new to me. He's using techniques I have never used. And, you know, it's just, and a lot of terminology that I don't recognize. And, so when I was over with this other crew, like it was exactly the way I used to light stuff, you know, when I was working with Drake and we would do commercial stuff and I was the DP, it's exactly the way I do my short films. It's exactly the way I used to light stuff when I work with, John. And so it was just super comfortable and super familiar. But what was interesting was, you know, I talked to the director and he was saying that this DP, he was like, yeah, you'll meet him tomorrow. And he's like, we share the same brain. He's like, they had shot a bunch, they've done a bunch of feature films together and stuff. And he was like, we share the same brain or whatever. And so I got to watch them work and I realized like, oh yeah, like it is cool when you work with somebody and you're that connected with them and you're that on the same page and stuff. And it did make me a little sad because I'm like, oh, I don't really have anyone like that. I maybe the closest I can think of is out here is like me and my audio guy. I like working with him really well. Now that we've done like 4 projects together, we we're kind of comfortable like that. But like there is no director that I want to DP for. And there's no DP that I want to direct for right now that we're like super, super close with. And I, even like you and me, I like working with you a lot. I like working for you a lot, but like our shooting style is way different. Our approach is way different. We're not really that on the same page. I don't know. I guess I'm just saying I always wish I several times have tried to have a partner and it's never worked out. And watching those two guys work together, I did get really jealous and sad of like, oh man, I wish I had another guy that the two of us were like locked in like that.
Mm.
'Cause I haven't felt that way since my very first boss mentor, Jonathan. You know, we worked together for like 2 years starting when I was in college. So 2010, 11, kind of 12. We were like, that's some of the most fun I've ever had editing was when we would be sitting in my office together and I would have my hands at the keyboard and he'd be sitting next to me with a dip in his mouth and a spit cup. And we would edit and make choices together and throw ideas back and forth. And, you know, and then when we were shooting, like we were studying other videographers together. We were learning together and like we were, you know, sharing a brain and, you know, we worked together like 12-hour days, 7 days a week for like 2 years straight. And like, it's the best stuff I've ever done. Like I spent that much time with John, but that was very much, he's the boss and I'm the whipping boy. You know, and like, I don't know. I just never been that close to the, it made me kind of sad that I don't have a partner like that. All right, that's it. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey guys, Michael here with Video Bros. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We love you for it. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks so much.